Hello, everyone. Good evening. I'm happy to see you. Happy to be here. So a child appeared in someone's rectangle. And that reminds me of how, you know, sometimes we can look at children or teenagers or even, you know, the young millennials on the cafe terraces here in Paris, and their carefree attitude. Children running and jumping and dancing, and teenagers almost like young animals, you know, pushing each other and flirting with each other, and then the millennials, you know, they're very cool and feeling all powerful, and everything is ahead of them, and they have no sense of mortality. And it's possible to look on those others with envy, thinking, oh, I wish I could be like that. You know, I wish I had that energy of the little child who's running around and playing and just freely being. I wish I had, you know, that teenage energy of becoming, discovering things, discovering a different aspect of the world that they weren't aware of as children, awakening to new sensations, to new ways of being, to our body changing, our relations with people changing. Envying the millennials with no sense of their mortality. And then when we do that, at least what I've now come to see in myself when I do that, is that I realize that when I'm doing that, I'm not really being where I am and who I am. And I'm not really staying with what is right here now. And therefore, I can't appreciate the energy that is mine, the place that is mine, the role that is mine, I'm not appreciating the life that I've lived until now, and what that means for who I am now and my place where I am now. It's the same thing when children wish they were adults, you know, they want to be grown up. But their idea of grown up is not actually what grown up is. Fortunately, they don't know that. Fortunately, they want to be grown up like a child wants to be grown up. And I know with my children, I always encouraged them when they weren't happy with where they were and they wanted to be older and be able to do other things. I would try to encourage them to appreciate where they were, you know, appreciate the moment in their life where they were, whatever was happening in their life. Sometimes it wasn't easy, you know, when you're 14 years old, it's not easy to appreciate what's going on. You know, the other girls are mean. The other boys have more muscles or whatever it is, you know, it's like, what does it really mean to appreciate? I mean, the implications of that, of appreciating who we are and where we are enormous. And all of the strategies that we have to not do that are phenomenal. And we see them every moment. The denial of reality. We had a not surprising, but quite extraordinary demonstration of that in the US presidential debate, where I'm sure you've heard of it, even if you didn't see any of it, but where one Donald Trump, all he did was just shout and talk over. It was just pure, pure deluded behavior of not being with things as they are, not being with the issues, whatever, you know, the pandemic and climate change and racial division and hate in American society and in economic inequalities, not being with any of that, of course, but also not being with the situation of being on a debate stage, having certain agreements to how to behave, and not behaving that way, denying them. And this is astounding behavior. And yet it's really common, because we all do this at different degrees all the time. You know, not that we talk over people and we don't let others speak and we don't take responsibility for our actions, but there are things we don't want to see. You know, the Buddha's fundamental teachings originated around looking at old age, sickness, and death. And when we don't look at that, then we are just creating more suffering. And so this, I just give the example of Donald Trump because that's very present for a lot of us. This was just a phenomenal demonstration of not being with things as they are. And I say it's not surprising because that's what he does all the time. And no, it's not surprising that someone who does that all the time was elected to that position, because that appeals to people who don't, who also do that, you know, which is a lot of us, right? But it's as if finally someone, we can put someone in power who doesn't want to look at reality, who doesn't want to see things as they are. So then that comforts us in our not looking at things as they are. And, you know, as the Buddha's fundamental teaching was that because we don't look at that, because we don't look at old age, sickness, and death, which are manifestations of change, right? Because we try to hold on to things and keep them fix them in a certain way, how we want them to be. And again, Donald Trump is a living example of that, you know, coloring his skin, making his hair be a certain way, putting all of his energy into image and possessions and outer signs of what he thinks of as wealth, These are all symptoms of denying old age, sickness, and death. So apparently, I read just today that apparently someone who was a student of Shunryu Suzuki, who was, you know, one of the great Zen masters in the West in San Francisco in the 1960s and early 70s, and who wrote a book that this is the 50th anniversary this year of that book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. So they asked various people what the book had meant to them. And one of the people they talked to was someone who had been a student of his in the 60s in San Francisco. And said that during a retreat or something, someone asked him, you know, you taught all of these beautiful teachings you give and all of this, but I don't understand any of it really. Can you just say something really simple? You know, what is it really all about, or something like that? And the guy telling the story said he thought that Suzuki Roshi might be offended, or might joke about the question or something, because the guy who was telling the story thought that it was kind of, he shouldn't have asked a question like that. It was showing his ignorance and his not respecting the teacher's teaching or whatever. But he said, actually, no, Suzuki Roshi was very serious, and he thought for a moment. And then he said, everything changes. That was the one basic teaching that he offered. And that really does say it all. If we can truly experience that and all of the implications of that, our lives are transformed. Our experience of life is transformed. How we lead our lives is transformed. How we behave with others is transformed. Because this really does go to the Buddha's basic teaching of impermanence and how not seeing that causes suffering. And that can take the form of, you know, Donald Trump just bulldozering for an hour and a half on television, denying reality. Or it can be, you know, me walking down the street and seeing children and wishing I was a child instead of who I am. It can be not turning away from someone who is presenting us with their suffering, with their difficulty, and not fully receiving it, not fully acknowledging it. Can be not fully taking responsibility for our actions, speech, thought. So there are a lot of manifestations of it. And then how do we respond to that? So, okay, everything changes. Well, what do we do? How do we live with that? Because that seems like something impossible to live with, you know? And yet it's not, actually. If we just when we're sitting on our cushions, we do it. You know, we're living fully with impermanence when we're sitting there on our cushions. Things come and things go while we're sitting there, and we don't intervene. We just let them be. if something arises and we need to respond, so, you know, Krisha's daughter comes in and she needs to respond, she responds. If she didn't, then she would be hanging on to something and not accepting that everything changes. You know, someone, I think Barbara got up and put on a sweater or something. Or maybe I'm mistaken, but I thought that's what she did. Whatever arises, we respond to it without clinging to some idea of how we want it to be or how we don't want it to be. We don't want to be sick. We don't want to be old. We don't want to die. Of course not. You know, of course we don't want any of that. But if we actually let go of those deep positions we have of wanting and not wanting, then it's really not difficult to appreciate and almost enjoy whatever is. It doesn't mean you enjoy being sick or old or dying. But the added suffering of not resisting it is not there. And so it's easy in that sense. It's easy, excuse me. The changing seasons, that's another one, right? You know, I was thinking the other day how, the sun has changed now. Because I've spent so much time in my garden since March, I have a completely different experience of how the sun moves. Well, actually, the earth is moving, but about how the sun's positions change in relation to my garden. And places in the garden that in the summertime, we had to put up an umbrella for the sun to eat lunch because it was so hot, the sun. Now there's hardly any sun in that corner throughout the day. I was regretting that the other day, thinking, oh, that was so good. But then, you know, I dropped that. And I could just appreciate it how it is now, how the garden is now. We had these really tall flowers, dahlias, outside our in view of our window in the garden. And they were a mistake. My husband planted them in March or April, and he didn't know they were going to be so tall. And they grew to be like two meters high, which is really tall for these flowers, dahlias. And he kept saying all the time, oh, that was bad. I shouldn't have planted them there because then they blocked everything that was behind them. At least from this point of view, from being in the house, right? If you were outside on the other side, they were behind everything else, but you know. And they just kept flowering and flowering and flowering, and growing and growing and growing, until about 2 weeks ago when they started dying, which is normal. And so then, during the weekend, on Monday, one afternoon I came and I looked out the window and he had taken them out, which is what he explained you have to do, and you save the bulbs and then you bring them inside and then you plant them again in the spring. So now the experience of the garden is completely different because those dahlias aren't there anymore. It's really stunning. And being attached to having them there or not having them there would make me feel a certain way. So if I wanted them to be there, and they weren't, and I was attached to that, then I would be unhappy that they weren't there. Or if You know, my husband eventually let go of the fact that they were tall. They just were what they were. And they were these amazing flowers that just kept coming and coming. Things change. Everything changes. And now I can appreciate my garden in a way that in a different way. You know, I'm not appreciating it like I appreciated it before. Or let's say I'm appreciating it in the same way, but I'm appreciating different things. I'm appreciating it as it is. And can we let go then of how we want the garden to be? But let's make the garden the metaphor for the world, for our life, for other people. Can we let them be who they are, the others? Can we let ourselves be who we are? That's actually a bigger challenge sometimes. I have this postcard on my board that's behind my desk, which is not behind me tonight, but that is a quote from Jack Kerouac, from his book, The Dharma Bums. And it says, equally empty, equally to be loved, equally a coming Buddha. And this, he's talking about every being. So every being is equally empty, meaning has no fixed identity, is always changing, is not separate from the other beings, so is connected, all of us are connected, all the beings, and yet is singular, because it's empty, and because it's not separate, it's singular. Every being, every person, everything. And therefore, it's equally to be loved. The essence of that being is love, and there is nothing not to love about the being. Because it's just what it is. And we don't have any ideas about how it should be or shouldn't be. And it's perfect as it is. That singularity is beautiful and lovable. And then equally a coming Buddha recognizes that we all have this Buddha nature, which is just this fundamental emptiness. And we all have the potential to realize that, to see that, to experience that in ourselves. We don't experience it. You know, we could say, well, I haven't experienced that. But you do have that potential. Everyone does. And Kerouac, I keep that on my bulletin board because he reminds me of that. Equally empty, equally to be loved, equally a coming Buddha. Even Donald Trump. No, even Donald Trump. If we can keep that in mind, first about myself, so I am equally empty, equally to be loved, and equally a coming Buddha. And the other is too. So often, though, we have masks. We have ideas about who we should be or who we shouldn't be, who we want to be. And therefore, we can't see who we truly are. We can't appreciate it. We can't truly love ourselves. We can't truly experience what it is to be empty. But we have the potential to do that. We have the potential to be that. On the television last night, which I rarely watch television, but I was kind of looking for something to change my mind from all the political stuff going on. And I just happened upon a French literary talk show. The French are really big on these things, you know, French literary talk shows. But it's a good one, actually, which I never watch, but I stumbled upon it. And the guy, one of the authors, and he's old now, he's probably 80 something. His name is Philippe Labreau. He's like this popular French writer. He's made movies, journalist, kind of very always in the media and things. And he wrote this book, which is kind of like a memoir. And I was really surprised to hear him talk. And I came in the middle of it, so I only heard about 10 minutes of it, but he said something to the effect that the journalist asked him, so you talk about how you always had a mask on. And he said, yes, I did. You know, throughout my life, I always was wearing a mask. And I was always, people used to make fun of me and say, oh, Labreau, he's sitting there with his feet up on the desk, a cigar in his mouth. Il fait l'américain, because he's a real Americanophile. And he said, I had this mask and I was playing a role. And the journalist said, so, but you're not anymore. And he said, well, no, you know, as I guess it's with age, the masks fell. And little by little, the masks fell. And I think that now I don't have those masks anymore. And I felt it, actually. I've seen that guy on television. He's kind of just a French personality, you know? And I've seen him, and I actually even was at he came and visited the newspaper where I worked. And so we had lunch with him. This was, you know, probably 25 years ago or 20 years ago. And he was very much that person that he described with the mask. And last night on the television, he was not. And at one point, there were some other writers too, and there was a discussion going on. And he said, Labreau said, but you know, it just comes down to love. And I thought, what? Philippe Labreau on a French literary talk show is saying it really just comes down to love. And one of the other writers said, oh, well, you have had a lot of mistresses or something. And he kind of tried to protest, and he said, no, it's not that love. And then the journalist intervened and said, got him started on the question of women, saying, oh, how women had been so important in his life or something. And you could see his face when the journalist was shifting the conversation. Was almost like there was some disappointment, I think, but he also realized that there was no point. I mean, he couldn't, there it would be like, you know, trying to change a dog into a cat or something. The conversation couldn't go where he had introduced it to go by saying it's all about love. It all comes down to love, I think. And I thought, wow, you know, this is really an interesting example of everything changes. Philippe Labeau changes. French literary talk shows change, and yet they don't, because there was that one moment of clarity, and then it moved on to, oh yes, women and mistresses, and, you know, that's what you mean by love. Although, you know, I think everybody knew that wasn't. On some level, they knew that's not what he was talking about, but it was too uncomfortable to, it was kind of like Trump talking over it. You know, you had to talk over it. You couldn't go there. Not possible. The more we pay attention, the more we see it. The more we let settle the cloudy chatter that's usually filling all the space up in our mind, in our heart, the more we become aware of things as they are. And there's a lot of peace and relief in that. So, anyone want to say anything? I'd love to hear what you have to say, or questions, comments. You can use the hand raising function again if you want to. Krisha?
Hi, everyone. just a thought. I don't know. For me, it's always the same thought. It's the story you were telling us, the French guy and the love, and it wasn't, and people couldn't go there. There's a Rumi kind of telling. I don't know the words, but it's like, keep your eyes in the wounded places and let love in. And I think for us humans, the love, for us to let in love, it always have that tricky spot, it's tricky, it's difficult, and it's easier, oh, women, oh, men, oh, well. Just remember to say that. I would love to know whom is better, but I don't know. But I know what, I think I know what you were telling. But what I was thinking when you were talking with us about the summer, autumn, winter, spring, how do you say that? The
seasons.
Seasons, thank you. it's another tricky stuff. We don't like change. Sometimes I really hate change. But if seasons don't change, we really get distressed. If there's always sun and we don't have water, we do get in stress. All collectively, we can't, although we don't like changes, we can't stand that things never change. There's also that in this changing difficult quest that we are all. Just to say that, it reminded me. When you were saying that, it reminded me that sometimes things not to change, it's intolerable also. The seasons, some feelings, even the good ones, if they don't change, they lose strength, so they kind of change. So I think we all know in changes we have some kind of comfort, and knowing that things are going to change keep us also going, although we do attach, but we just fool ourselves. It's contradictory forces, but I think we know changes somehow keeps the energy flowing, the life.
Exactly, life is change, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it seems like a paradox. Debbie?
Yeah, this scene that you were describing of walking down the street and seeing the kids. I was coming up my street and I heard a very loud bellowing sound, and I thought either it's a killer or a teenager, and it was a teenager. They were imitating their teachers, and they were all kind of laughing and pretending that they were the different teachers and stuff. And I have this, it's almost a physical pain, and I do not want to be back teaching teenagers in school. I said to myself, you couldn't do it, and I thought, I don't want to do it. But I have an uprising of desire to be back there. And this has been happening to me a lot recently, but it's not pleasant. I come across things in my house. I have some silverware that belonged to my parents that are in my house now, and I don't use them because every time I touch that silver spoon, I get my parents and the years I used to go and visit them. And recently I started looking at it and thinking, I want to be able to think about the past and not have it hurt me so much. So I kind of turned it around and I thought, well, if it hurts you so much that it, because it was so, and it wasn't that great actually in reality, but here looking back on it in reminiscence, if it hurts you so much because it was so beautiful, if it was so beautiful, then maybe it doesn't have to hurt you so much. Maybe it can just be, I mean, isn't it wonderful that I have good memories of my parents rather than, oh my God, I have these memories of my parents and I can't see them anymore. Turn it around. If I had got to this age and I didn't have any beautiful memories, that would be a sad commentary on anything. So I'm trying to change it a little bit so it's not so, it's not painful. It's so poignant sometimes. It shocks me. It's like, it's almost physical. That's all I wanted to say.
You mean the pain of what's almost physical? The pain.
I pick up this spoon and I get my mother full in my face and some conversation or some moment with her and I think, oh, and it feels, it's almost in my stomach and my chest, this sort of gripping, grasping feeling. Yeah. So sale. As if I were going to almost have a cramp. And the other day I thought, well, maybe we should breathe, undo the cramp and see that if it's that poignant and meaningful, that's a good sign and not a bad thing. So take away the physical pain of it or something.
Mm. Yeah, poignant is a really good word. Poignant, yeah. I don't know how you would translate that into Portuguese, but... it's a really evocative word. I think we can all recognize what she's describing. Yeah.
In fact, it's a kind of retroactive love, now that I've said what I just said.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I can, and I think we can probably experience that too with with others, you know, when we experience someone else's, when someone else is experiencing that kind of poignant thing and they share it with us, we can share it with, we can feel it because we know it ourselves. Or we can feel emotion about something because it's ours too. And sometimes because it hurts, we don't want to see it. You know, we think that it's, we don't want to let ourselves be touched. And I know this from experience. I had a hard time coming to, you know, coming to grips with that kind of thing that Debbie, you're describing. I mean, not that specific thing, but not wanting to feel that, that poignance. And then really, when I finally was able to, I realized what I was missing by not allowing myself to feel that, you know.
It's very intense, but it is, it, once you, once the resistance stops, it's also a wonderful moment, I mean.
Exactly. Yeah. And if we're attached to our self-interests, our self, our positions, ideas, those are just ways of protecting ourselves from feeling something like what Debbie's, you know, describing. It's all protection, all of it. Not wanting to feel, not wanting to experience what is.
Why is it not well considered to show emotion? Now that you're saying this, I realize, as you were saying about the Labo and everybody else on TV and the media and in our lives, why is it, why are we all hiding our emotions again? I think I forgot the reason.
Well, you know, I think there are differing degrees in different situations and explanations, but I think the general, you know, the common denominator is because we experience it as weakness or not being in control. It throws in our face the absence of control, and which is actually the truth of our lives. You know, we can't control anything, but we try to convince ourselves that we can. And some emotions seem to be okay, you know, like anger seems to be one that it's okay to express. That, I guess that's associated with power and strength. Although not for women, it's not okay for women to express anger. It's frowned upon. So, you know, it's all just comes down to the basic thing, though, of not wanting to be exposed, not wanting to be vulnerable. And so we do this on an individual level, and then we also do it on a collective level. And yet we love to go to movies and cry, you know, or stuff like that. This morning with my creative writing, my writing workshop students, I gave them an assignment we're using Toni Morrison, the American writer Toni Morrison, as a focus. And she writes always about people who are not seen, not heard, overlooked, excluded. Those are who her subjects are. So basically, little black girls, or basically black Americans. And so this is what we've been doing work around this. So today the assignment was, I said, okay, the scene is a refugee camp on a Greek island. And I made up these people. So I, you know, had like Hassan, Syrian, 25 years old, Zara, Afghan woman, 19 years old or whatever, you know. So I made up these people. And then they each had two refugees and two, what do you call them? Volunteers who were working in the camp. So like Suzanne, an Irish retired lady, Dominique, a French lawyer working for Lawyers Without Borders, or, you know, things like this. So they each had two of them from each group. And they were supposed to write from the first person. The beginning of the phrase was la nuit d'avant de partir. So the night before leaving, ... And then they had to write it. And they had to put themselves in that person and tell what their experience was the night before they left. The night before they left their country to become refugees, before they went off on the long road to exile, or the night before they went off to the camp, if they were a, you know, volunteer or whatever. And it was very moving. You know, here were these French people in Paris, you know, on a Thursday morning, and they were able to do it. You know, they were able to like go into these, what, even though they don't really know what it's like, but they were able to share, to transcend their own position and belief and try to be that person for 10 minutes. You know, they had basically 10 minutes to write about each one. And it was very, very moving. We all have this potential. Maybe it's easier in a situation like that when you're just making it up, and when you probably feel like you're in a superior position compared to the other person. And you're trying to show empathy or compassion. I don't know. But we can do that all the time. Put ourselves in the other's shoes. First, put ourselves in our shoes, which is sometimes harder. Krisha?
Well, today I'm talking. About what you told, I have had an experience that I never forget. I think it wasn't a documentary, it was a short stuff. It's because I don't know the name in English, on news. And I think it was a Senegal lady from, she spoke French, and she was in a place that the ground was orange earth. She wore those cloths, you know, with the, I think it was green or blue with a lot of color and some. She was telling why she wanted to go away from there. And it was, you know, universal. She wanted to have access to food, health, education, to have a better life. And that I think it's the poignant word you were talking. It made me want to cry because I was astonished. I was younger, because she just wanted what all we want. And I thought, because she was in Africa, not in Africa, but in Africa's in a place really different from us, she couldn't, it's not imagine, but she, because things for her and everybody around never was like that. I never thought that, nevertheless, she wanted it, you know? I felt astonished and really sad, because I felt that, I think she was a mother, urgency in I need to have a better life, and she didn't know what that was, but she wanted anything and anyway. Just that. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, that's equally empty, equal to be loved, equally becoming Buddha. You know, we're all the same, actually. We all want the same things. And that doesn't matter where we live, you know. Okay, that seems like a good place to stop. Take that into your lives and run with it, you know? Thank you.
Lisa is a bad connection. She asked me to do the vows, sing the vows and the bells.
Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Awaken, awaken, take heed. Do not squander your life.
Thank you, everyone. We'll see you in a Zoom Zendo soon somewhere.